Hello and welcome to Horrorspiria. My name is May.
And my name is Clinton. I'm back.
I know. Do you know this? We haven't done this since
June. You buried me
June
in the backyard on June.
Except that's a lie. You stand me up all the time.
That's not true.
You can't even say it with a straight face.
I don't. I've got two kids and a lovely wife and a
Horrorspiria and one bedroom apartment. Clinton got a family.
Yes, but that's not fair. I've been keeping up. You've been busy too.
No,
I've watched too.
We hang out.
I've watched things,
but we
that
hang
we
out
don't even
once
talk
a month.
About.
We hang out once a month.
We do hang out once a month. That's
yeah.
true. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I tell
so
you.
Welcome back.
Thank you.
How do you feel being back?
Well, you know, the place has changed a lot since I was last here.
How has it changed?
Well, listeners. There's a dog.
The dog is temporary. The dog is a distraction.
The cat is forevermore.
The cat is forevermore.
There is an old, very cute dog in the house today, but just for today.
Yeah. Got him for you.
Unfortunately, I wish he could stay longer because he's really cute. But yes, I'm back in the house. I've been watching some scary stuff and some funny stuff because today we're talking about...
horror comedies. Yeah. Well, kind of. I mean, yes. horror comedy, I think, is the best way to put it.
Yeah.
This episode is based off of one of the modules that I do for my class. It tends to be...
module time.
Yeah. And so what I call it in the class is terror parody based off of a chapter that they read.
Okay.
But... I realize I don't really like that term.
Terror parody.
So in general, when we were thinking of this episode, we thought, why not comedies? And so horror comedies.
Why not just call it comedies?
No, comedy. I mean horror comedy. No,
yeah.
No.
I think you're leaving behind. I think you were really good with terror parody.
No, listen, the reason why, okay, but why that part is relevant is before we get started, there are three definitions I do want to talk about.
Okay, got my pencil and my paper.
All right, we're just getting started. First off, I wanted to say, before we get started, that everyone should watch Servant.
No, what I want to say before we all get started is don't watch Servant.
Servant is the best horror series I've seen in the last 10 years,
May,
I think.
What?
Yeah.
I offer you series.
I know. Your taste is so bad.
And you kick them aside.
I know. They're awful.
And then you...
they're really bad.
Get zoned in on Servant of
on
all
Servant,
shows.
And it is... the most underrated show on TV right now. I wish that
what's
I could
it rated?
Force. What do you mean? It's right now.
What is the rating of currently?
The rating
publicly?
Is like no one knows it exists, and I'm like,
and that's the way it should
be. M. Night Shyamalan is doing the thing. Not only is he doing the thing,
the
he's hiring his lady daughters to direct stuff
okay.
and write stuff, and I love it.
Okay.
Servant is my favorite. You know what Servant is? Servant is straight up biblical horror. And I talked about this with Gabby, but actual biblical horror is kind of my jam.
Yeah.
I dig it.
I feel like
make Jesus Christ scary because
okay.
he is.
Yeah. And there's much horror in the Bible, right?
Very much so.
Yeah.
I
so
would
you kids
adapt
want a
the
horror
Bible
movie.
Into a horror series.
How about you just sit down with the world's greatest
I mean, honestly,
book of all time.
Yeah,
yeah.
Can't get me with Joel Osteen.
I agree. Bill, and
is that his name, Joel Osteen?
Joel Osteen. Yeah, I think that's close enough. Yeah, the
Jerry
guy.
Falwell is that one?
Oh, that guy's dead. I'm pretty
oh,
sure.
Oh, he's dead.
Yeah,
damn.
Pretty sure racist and dead.
I mean,
just
kind
of has
racist.
The name of the.
What about
name
Tammy Faye Baker?
Racist? No, country singer.
No.
Racist.
We're just going
to
keep Carrie
we
Underwood.
We need to stay in our
wheel.
We have
Clarkson.
A wheelhouse, and it is, we do know a lot of pop culture, but I think we're going.
Okay, we don't know. You know what
we're
show
too white
is good?
Here.
The Righteous Gemstones
we,
is
yes,
really good.
I think we've talked about
oh,
this
Oh, yeah, we've
before.
Talked.
It's
we
been
talked
a
about
year,
this
but we've talked about Righteous Gemstones.
Anyway, so
you get really into shows that I think are good.
I do.
You
Servant is the best one.
You are
of
the torchbearer.
I don't know if I'm the torchbearer.
Of
you know what I'm doing right
definitely.
Now
yes.
that I wanted to do since 2017 when I first watched the last season. I've been rewatching Twin Peaks, and it just reiterates that I don't think anything greater has been made than Twin Peaks.
Really?
Yeah, it's my favorite.
Even with
thing.
All, you mean the original series or the new series?
In totality.
The totality.
To me,
of it.
I look at Twin Peaks like a total. Like the original 90s series had its charm, and then it came back in 2017 and we didn't know what to expect, and David Lynch fucked us. And I and like
in
I
a
said,
good way.
This is the
is
first
that what you're saying?
Time. Yeah.
Okay.
This is the first time since I watched it the first time I've been rewatching it, and it just aged so well for me.
The new stuff.
So I love Twin Peaks and I love Servant.
Can I say what I love? Mm-hmm. I'm nervous to tell you this because all of the series that I like, you just...
I do hate everything. Like, I tried to watch Los Espookies, hated it.
I didn't love Los Espookies. But no, with a show that I love, and I will stand by as the best horror series of whatever year came out, probably last year, is the translated title is something like Strangers Are Hell, or gosh, I should get it because I'm on the podcast talking about it. Other People Are Hell, Strangers Are Hell. It's a Korean horror series based on a manga or comic strip, and it was knockout dynamite for me. It was.
You actually haven't told me about this one.
I've mentioned it long ago, but just mentioned this. Yeah. This one, it rocked me so hard, and it was just so good.
Well,
watch it. That's my Servant.
That's your Servant.
And I did watch most of Servant.
You
of
didn't watch
one.
The second season.
Well, why does it need a second season?
Because the second season is much better than the
why
first
don't you
season.
Just end it at the
no,
first season?
No, because it blossomed into a remarkable show, and I would die for Servant.
You know, I saw it blossoming further, and I thought, get back in there and
nope.
finish this show.
It just goes off the rails,
yeah.
and that's where
wow.
I like to exist
it
outside of the
pretty
rails.
Off the rails.
Yeah.
Can I just spoil the whole show? Is it a spoil to reveal the initial?
I mean, you didn't even watch it, so I don't understand.
I watched a lot of Servant.
You don't even know what happens at the
you.
End, and you don't even know what happens in the second season.
Is there
season.
An end? Do they finish the story?
First off,
yeah.
M. Night Shyamalan says that it should be 5 seasons, which thank the Lord. Thank the Lord, as in the New Zealand singer Lord. And yeah, right now we're 2 seasons in. They're filming the 3rd season in Philadelphia. I also learned a fun fact. Do you know that M. Night Shyamalan does not shoot outside of Pennsylvania?
I didn't know that.
He's from Philly.
Okay.
And the only reason why I knew that is because of the zine. One of the directors that I'm speaking to for the zine.
Now, this is the Killers zine.
Yeah, Caution. Yeah. Follow us, Caution Fanzine, okay. on all the socials.
Killers, the musical group.
Cool. Killers musical group. Very, uh-huh.
They're a band.
We do the thing here. One of the directors replaced M. Night Shyamalan on a Brandon Flowers music video. And I always wondered why. They never explained why. So I got to ask him why M. Night was replaced. And listen to this. M. Night wanted to build an actual village for the music video because he never shoots outside of Pennsylvania. And the label was like, is this motherfucker joking? Like,
yeah.
It's a music video. We're not building a village for a music video. So they fired
him. Yeah.
They ended up just asking the guy that did it because he was already kind of like doing communications. And he's like, I mean, fuck it. We're not going to build it. Go find a place for us to shoot this.
Yeah.
We're not building it.
Right.
But I thought that was kind of funny and cute in a way.
Yeah.
Doesn't shoot outside of Pennsylvania.
Yeah. I tell you,
This is an M. Night Shyamalan pro-cast.
Be fired more.
No. I will go down for M. Night Shyamalan.
Are you... we don't have to go too deep into this, but I guess it shouldn't surprise me that he wanted to go 5 seasons with this show.
The thing is, you didn't see how the first season ended.
I got 9 episodes deep.
Okay, wow. There's 10 episodes and you couldn't wait until the twist.
I didn't want another twist.
Okay, well then, that's not my fault.
It's not.
There's a lot of story left.
I'm not blaming you.
I gotta say, I think it's an angel horror.
What does that mean?
I think that's a horror about angels.
Oh, about angels. Okay. Okay. Well, clearly you love it.
I do.
Yes.
Yeah. And yeah. That's my theory. It's either angels, deliverance, uh-huh. or witches.
Yes.
Or zombies.
And my take is it doesn't matter.
it matters a lot. I think yeah. it's amazing.
To me, it's a real doll horror.
No. And I don't think that there's... You know what is my favorite thing about it? Every episode is a half hour. And very rarely do horror / drama episodes mm-hmm. go off in a half hour. Servant goes off. It's amazing. And you all have seen how awful Clinton's taste is on this pod, so I think you should listen to me. Okay. All right, now we can move on to horror comedies. So today, what are we looking at?
Horror comedies. We're looking at, well, these are three movies, two movies and a show.
Yeah.
That you selected.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what the... If there's like a theme overall, that how did you come up with these?
I came up with these because this is actually what I do in my module. So, okay, now to get back to the vocabulary part. So this terror parody module basically argues that most horror comedies fall under three categories, typically. And those categories are spoofs, parodies, and satires. And for that module, I give them options for films or entities, aka shows to watch. And these are the options that they have. They can either do What We Do in the Shadows, the series. They could do Phantom of the Paradise, or they can do One Cut of the Dead. And mainly the reasoning behind that is I love, these are probably my three favorite horror comedy entities mm-hmm. like ever. And they also have to watch Scream, like parts of
Scream.
Yeah,
you love Scream too.
And parts of Rocky Horror.
I'm not here to be, you know, fight you on everything you love.
I know. I mean, we've already spoken about Scream.
Get that real
before.
Doll out of my face.
Anyway, but first, let's try and define the difference between spoof, parody, and satire. How would you define a spoof, or what do you think a spoof is?
Oh, gosh. This is like calling on the dumb kid in class.
Yeah.
So what's the spoof? What's a spoof? Oh, God. I haven't even thought about this for 2 seconds.
I know.
A spoof.
Yeah.
Okay.
You can think of a movie.
Okay. So it's like something, but it's sillier. It's like Mad Magazine. Did you ever read Mad Magazine or Cracks?
No.
They'd like take whatever is in pop culture and then just like goof on it.
You know, that's not a bad definition. All so right. Spoofs we define as like a type of entity, I guess, that had... Let me...
Uh-oh, whoa.
I almost define satire. Okay. No, it is a type of usually a film. It can be a series. I can't think of a spoof series off the top of my head. So typically these are films.
I'll be thinking. There's yeah.
I don't know.
You don't think it's been done?
Just listen. So okay. Spoofs, as you said, I think probably the key thing to pick up from your definition is kind of like its silliness.
Okay.
It contains many elements of a topic. So for horror, you know, horror spoofs. So let's think of horror spoofs. Can you think of an example maybe?
I can't think of any specific example.
Or maybe just any spoofs in general that are filmed.
Well, oh, sure. Okay. So, would the Scream not, Damon Wayans franchise, Brothers?
You mean Scary Movie?
Scary Movies.
Yes, exactly. Okay. Scary Movie is a great example of spoofs. A spoof. And I mean, on that, note, Scary Movie, not another teen movie. Some of my students have suggested things like Spaceballs, Airplane, and I agree. Those are spoofs, you know. Yeah. They are generally taking on a genre, you know, like teen movies or horror movies, and just making
spoofing
a bunch
of
spoof, like literally spoofing on them. Yeah.
Which is actually kind of interesting that wider popular culture, we don't use that word very much.
Well, listen.
It's not like, hey.
Well, listen.
Don't
listen,
spoof
though.
On me, man.
No, listen. So then parody, right?
Yes.
What is a parody?
A parody is more making fun of one particular thing.
Damn, dude.
Yeah.
You actually nailed that.
All right. Thank you.
Where did you get that from?
I'm a, you know, I'm in the cultural zeitgeist swimming around.
I'm surprised. I wasn't expecting you to get these. No, yeah. So parody focuses on one specific, like, thing. It's spoofing. Okay. So what I like to tell.
So a parody can spoof.
So this is what I tell my students. Every parody is a spoof, but not every spoof is a parody.
Gotcha.
And so parodies are very focused. So for example, Rocky Horror, that's actually a parody because it takes most of its structure from The Little Dark House.
Which was a movie or play?
It was a movie. Okay. From, it was a pre-code movie. I think I saw movie.
That as part of our pre-code.
Yeah, it was a pre-code movie. It does obviously involve other references to things and homages to things, but generally, it is following a very specific structure, and you kind of know what to anticipate as a result. So that's typically what parodies are. They're very focused on like one piece. Another example, Young Frankenstein. Again, Young Frankenstein kind of contained elements of other things, but it's very much a parody of Frankenstein, right? Mm-hmm. So yeah, a haunted house.
And again, to reiterate, a parody can be a spoof. But not every spoof is a parody.
Exactly.
Yeah. But I just want, because I don't know why I wanted to say that again. I just felt like
But just think about it. In a parody, you're spoofing, right? But you're spoofing with a very specific intent.
Are they different? Like, is one a noun and one's a verb? Like, No.
No. Okay. Though, because you can, I've seen people use parody as a verb, like,
yeah,
but generally these are two nouns.
Okay.
Of course, spoof is used a lot more as a verb.
Yeah.
But especially,
true. Like, it'd be tough to go into Blockbuster and be like, can I take a look at your spoof section?
Yeah, you see, it's not really a thing.
Yeah.
It's like, because like, for example, it's not really like there's a satire genre, right? But satires are very much a thing that happens.
So is satire our third word?
So satire is our third word. Okay. Now, what's the difference with satire? Oof. I think this is easy.
Really? This one strikes me as hard because I feel like we've covered a lot of ground with parody and spoof. So I actually am going to go ahead and say I do not know what the difference between a parody and a satire is.
Damn.
Other than satire sounds more like serious or intellectual.
But think about that. Why are satires more intellectual? That's true.
Maybe they're not a spoof. They have not as much spoof in them.
I don't think that's necessarily true.
Okay, you tell me.
Satires are always critiques of society. That's the very definition of satire. You know? So, you know, that...
I guess, so it's more... Okay, yeah.
I mean, I've always been raised with knowing what satire is. So I've always known about things like satirical voices and how to spot a satire.
Uh-huh.
Because especially I think in the era that I grew up in, which was pretty much early 2000s, satire was very vibrant because of the Bush era. Like think of the Colbert Show.
Uh-huh.
You know, that was the satire. Right. But technically you could say, you know, The Colbert Show was sort of like a spoof.
Too,
and
I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the thing is, one thing that I discourage against, and a lot of my students are going to be listening to this, and I say this generally to anyone, is I don't like it when people just use all the terms to describe something.
Yeah.
I think that there are nuances. Like, Scary Movie isn't Rocky Horror, isn't Scream. Like, Scream is a satire.
Right.
You know?
You wouldn't say Scary Movie, satire.
Yeah, like it's not critiquing anything.
Yeah.
You know, it's just using those references to make you laugh. Mm-hmm. But satires usually are critiquing something. I think something that people get a little confused on is that satires must have like some political end goal. Mm-hmm. And not really. Typically, political satires tend to be one of the biggest subgenres, right? I think when we think of satires, you know, thinking like fucking Idiocracy and shit like that, you know, those were satires. But, you know, something like What We Do in the Shadows is a satire. But to me, what it's satirizing is the genre itself. Mm. You know, it's critiquing vampire films in and of themselves. Same with Scream. Scream was critiquing slasher genres in and of themselves in a late era slasher genre or slasher era. So yeah, satire. So those are the differences. Satires
cool.
is kind
see.
Of like the higher brow one per se.
Yeah.
But that's also why I like choosing the range that we did, because while I think What we do in the shadows is very intelligent and whatnot. I also think it's doing something different to Phantom of the Paradise.
They're very different. And One Cut of the Dead.
And One Cut of the Dead, exactly.
Yeah.
Which, in my opinion, all of these movies are satires.
Yeah, all of them are satires.
Absolutely. I would go down with that ship because I think they're both, all three of them are critiquing very specific and different things.
Yeah.
So horror comedies. I feel like generally every horror comedy falls under that realm, like Shaun of the Dead and forgot every horror comedy.
Every
now.
Horror comedy.
A satanic. What would you call satanic panic?
Oh, geez. Yeah, a campy romp.
I think I would call it
Under these three.
I think a spoof.
Yeah, it's pretty spoofy.
Yeah, or spoof. It's a spoof, like parody ish. Right. Yeah. Right, I don't think it's a satire. I don't think there is like some larger message hidden under it. And if there was, it was badly done.
Yeah. What about the new horror movie, The Freaky Friday style?
Freaky. Oh my God. Did you watch Freaky?
No.
Oh my God.
What is it? Satire?
Man, Freaky is awesome. Freaky is totally a satire. I absolutely agree. I wrote about it in my queer horror chapter, and that's actually how it gave me the answer. I think how it tackled the slasher is the satirical aspect of it. Yeah. Love Freaky. Love Christopher. This is very pro Christopher Landon.
Is that the director?
Space. Yeah.
Yeah.
He did.
What did he do also?
The Happy Death Day series. Oh, and I'll he co-wrote every single Paranormal Activity after the first one. And he made the Mexican one, which the Mexican Paranormal Activity is my favorite of the series.
Is that still American made or is
it was Paranormal Activity, the marked ones, and it was the first one that he directed on his own. But he wanted it to be very authentic to the Chicano culture specifically, you know, in LA, and I think it just did a remarkable job.
Wow.
And that in and of itself is how you build a queer sensibility in horror.
There we go.
But we'll talk about it another time. But yeah, horror comedy.
Cool. So where do we go next? Are we going to focus on
one
in particular?
How did you feel about these?
Without the context of parody, satire, spoof, I was like, well, I guess these are just movies that May likes. So my first question, that was the first thing, just putting together, what do these things have in common? So each of these things is super different.
Yeah.
Which one do you want to talk? Do you want to talk about one first more general?
We'll go in numerical order and we'll go into our old format of pausing and focusing on it.
Okay.
But yeah, I think first off, I think it's clear all of these movies are funny in very different ways.
Yes.
I think some of them are more obvious. They're not all of the same humor,
right,
which was,
and none of them are like laugh. Well, except I would say the most comedy of the comedies is the What We Do in the Shadows.
What We Do in the Shadows makes me laugh out loud every other minute.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I don't, that's like, again, that's your bad taste.
Well, we'll get there. We'll get there.
I think it's all very... Did you tell me to watch One Cut of the Dead or did I watch it first?
No, you saw it first and you recommended it to me. Yeah.
Okay.
And I thought, I don't care about another zombie movie.
Oh, yeah.
I don't care what they do.
Oh, yeah.
There's nothing interesting,
by the way,
to me about another zombie movie. And I was...
If you haven't watched these movies or series, I actually would suggest not listening to this episode yet, because I actually think the reveal in most of these things that we're talking about today are the reason why you should watch them. But especially for One Cut of the Dead.
Even the first one, even the
Phantom of the Paradise.
Yeah.
I don't think we're going to go into too many spoilers. You're right.
I was going to spoil like the first 75% of it.
No, yeah, we can actually. Phantom of the Paradise,
I don't think
it's been out
I don't
for
think
years.
It, I don't think it matters because
I don't
so
think
much
it matters
of it is
either.
So much of it is in the execution.
Oh, yeah.
And I could not
yeah.
possibly explain how
yeah.
cool it is to watch.
Phantom of the Paradise was awesome, wasn't it?
That was so awesome.
I only watched that for the first time last year.
Yeah.
And as soon as I finished watching it, I was like, why didn't I watch this before? Like, it's a Brian De Palma movie.
And
you
what
know?
Did that person do?
Brian De Palma.
Uh-huh.
Scarface.
Oh.
I almost said The Godfather. Carrie.
Oh, yes.
Sisters.
I even looked Brian this up De Palma. Afterwards. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
And was like one of his first movies?
It was 1975 when his very first.
It's crazy.
No, it's wild. And if anything, I think this movie is more appropriate today.
Yeah.
But okay.
It's the perfect runtime too. Like a lot of movies I struggle to get through. Even if they're classics, because
it's a straight up musical.
It is a quick musical.
Yeah.
They have rocks.
Yeah.
So hard.
The songs are really good.
Really good.
They're very good. Paul Williams wrote them, and he is still the president of ASCAP, which is the songwriting institution of America.
Paul Williams stars in it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're getting all in there.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So I guess let's first listen to some of Phantom of the Paradise. Phantom of the Paradise, right?
I forget. It has, yeah, I think that sounds exactly right.
All right. Okay, so before we get into it, here's a bit of 1974's Phantom of the Paradise, directed by Brian De Palma from the United States.
20th Century Fox presents Phantom of the Paradise, a gothic horror story.
What with that?
A beautiful love story. A cinematic odyssey through the rock universe. From Greece to glitter and beyond. The story of a sound, the man who created it, the girl who sang it, the monster who stole it, and the phantom who haunts the paradise, the ultimate rock palace. Phantom of the Paradise.
My music is for Phoenix. Only she can sing it. Anyone else that tries dies.
Phoenix.
Well, you told me one time that you'd be somebody, that you weren't working just to survive.
B.
Man, you better get yourself a castrato for this.
Paul Williams as Swan.
And the angels that defeated them.
I want you to stop terrorizing the paradise and rewrite your cantata.
And the Phantom.
Oh, stop from trying me, only you might satisfy me.
Of the Paradise.
There really is the Phantom.
All right, so that was a bit of Phantom of the Paradise. So yeah, Phantom of the Paradise, kind of tried to describe it. Like I said, this is a satire, pretty straightforward. It was written by Brian De Palma and directed by him. So this is an auteur work through and through. All of the music was done by Paul Williams, which Paul Williams has done like so many things.
He's like a Beach Boys guy?
No. I mean, like he did write for the Beach Boys.
He's got some like really famous.
No, he's written just off of Wikipedia. He's co-written Three Dog Nights, An Old Fashioned Love Song, Out in the Country, Helen Reddy's You and Me Against the World, David Bowie's Fill Your Heart, The Carpenters' We've Only Just Begun.
And he looks like a total.
He wrote Evergreen from A Star Is Born. Would you say he looks like a total what?
Oh, well, I wasn't even sure how I was going to finish that. He looks like he's maybe in his 40s or 50s. He looks kind of like a very young boy with like that aging disease where you would look like you're 50 years old, but because his hair was like 70s boy band bangs, blonde,
Yeah.
So he looks so perfect because he looks like a predator.
Oh my God.
He does. He is in the movie.
He is. But no, my favorite thing he's ever written is Rainbow Connection.
Okay. What's that? Is that the Kermit the Frog Muppet song? Okay. I'm back. I got it.
Yes. Which I don't know if we've talked about this on the pod, but I'm a huge Jim Henson. Oh no,
Of course. I mean, come on. Yeah. I didn't even have to say it. I knew it.
Yeah. So Paul William did all of the music.
Wait, 1 second. Now this is, for those of you who've never seen this, this is a satire of what?
So it is a satire. No, we'll get there.
I can, do you have an answer?
No, I mean, obviously it's a satire of the recording industry.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. I thought you were going to say what the whole title is, A Phantom of the Opera.
Oh.
Or is it a parody of Phantom of the Opera that is
Clinton
also a satire?
Is being confusing right now. Let's first get into the stats. So Paul Williams wrote it. Yeah. I mean, Paul Williams wrote all of the music. And he developed it alongside Brian De Palma. And it was one of those things where Brian De Palma, and this was in the 70s. Let's remember this. This is in early 70s. Brian De Palma, so he wrote it, but he didn't write any of the music, obviously. And so when he was talking to Paul Williams, trying to think of like archetypes for the characters, Brian De Palma was like, you know, I need like a Phil Spector creep.
And then did he say Phil Spector?
He literally said Phil Spector.
Oh my gosh. That's so funny. Again, this is early 70s. About Phil Spector.
No, literally. Phil Spector is the basis of this character.
No way.
And again, this is in the 70s before
Phil Spector probably got.
I assume.
Or maybe he was already.
I
don't know when that happened.
I don't know the deep history of Phil Spector. I assume, obviously, that there were rumors back then.
I mean,
because I think obviously that had to have come from somewhere. But I just think, especially thinking of it now, that's why I say like this film seems almost more prescient now. But anyway, so when Brian De Palma said that, apparently Brian De Palma like paused and looked at Paul and was like, Paul, you kind of look like Phil Spector. Why don't you just play this?
My gosh.
I was like, damn.
That's hilarious.
But
got him.
Literally got him.
It's like, oh, did you get your hair cut? Yeah, it looks like Phil Spector. You're in my movie.
Looks like, can you be the Predator
you look
in my movie?
Like, yeah, someone who does terrible things.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Anyway, so that is sort of like the background.
He was typecast.
He was typecast in the movie that he was writing about.
Yeah, he's like, I'm going to make the most beautiful music for this movie and be a sex offender.
It also stars Jessica Harper. Who
is she the
Phoenix.
Lead female? Yes.
Yeah, who I love to death. She did Shock Treatment, which was the sequel to Rocky Horror. And she also did Suspiria, which is what we're named after.
Whoa, bringing it all back.
Jessica Harper did all her, I mean, everyone
own
in
stunts.
That, all her own stunts singing. And singing.
Yeah. She killed it.
Her voice is so different than what you expected.
Yeah, I thought I was listening to like one of the kings of
old soul
music.
Old Souls is a great
that was
song.
Awesome.
But yes, in general, kind of the really interesting thing about Phantom of the Paradise that Clinton was confusing me about is that it kind of is taking on these different things at once, because I do agree that it has parody elements, because it is parodying Phantom of the Opera. It is also parodying Faust. It's parodying Picture of Dorian Gray. But I think at large, like the umbrella that covers all of it is a satire. But I think you're absolutely right. There are elements of parody. Mm. Absolutely. In this.
And it satirizes the recording industry. And
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just rather frank film.
So for someone who hasn't seen it, why is this on a horror podcast? It sounds like it's a straightforward satire parody, you know. Is there blood and guts?
Well, I think it's a horror. Don't you think it's a horror?
I think it does swerve into monster territory.
Yeah, I'll agree with that. It swerves into monster territory. And
can we give it a little bit of a plot summary, synopsis?
Why don't you give us a plot synopsis?
Okay, I'll try, but it's tough. All right, so in the beginning, there's like this music. They're in like a club.
Yeah.
And there's this boy band going on. Oh, and they're like, God, a throwback.
The opening scene, you just made me remember. The opening scene of this movie is probably one of my favorite opening scenes of all time. It's like a variety show, right?
Yeah. I got it as like a concert night, kind of like a music night at a club, yeah, or something. And there's like a record, important record producer in the audience that they're, yeah, performing for. And so there's like this throwback retro, like 50s greaser.
Yeah.
And they're,
yeah,
singing some really, oh my kind God, of raunchy so song about, yeah, suicide or something.
Yes.
And my first thought when I was watching was like, oh my God, I'm not paying attention to the words. I feel like whatever they're singing is important to the rest of this movie. And it really, wasn't.
The Juicy Fruits. Come on.
The Juicy Fruits. Yes.
That is a great band name.
The Juicy Fruit is a great band name. But it kind of set the tone as like weird, unsafe.
Oh yeah.
What's going to happen? So they go on and they're like a hit, the Juicy Fruits. People love them. And then after the Juicy Fruits, this weird, like, nerdy, dorky guy with his, like, music sheets, tons of music sheets of his original score, gets up there on just his piano and starts performing. And this really weird song that you wouldn't play at, like, you wouldn't follow up the Juicy Fruits,
yeah,
with this strange music savant, but who's, yeah, also so strange. So, but the record producer really likes it.
Yeah.
And
who's Paul Williams?
Who's Paul Williams? But we don't know that yet. He's like a shadowy figure.
Oh yeah. True.
Things happen.
Yeah.
The guy they take his music essentially. He, yeah, gets screwed.
Yeah.
He goes to jail. Why does he go to jail again?
Weird guy, right?
So I'm jumping way ahead, but they steal his music. He finds out they've stolen his music. He finds out that
Framed for drug dealing.
Yes, that's it. Framed for drug, because he finds out that they're auditioning women to sing his song.
Yep.
And so he's like, great, I'll just go and I'll just tell that the main guy and it'll all be great. But then he realizes that it's not really an audition. It's, yeah, a sex audition, because the record industry is filled.
It is a casting couch.
Because Phil Spector is a biatch.
Yeah, Phil Spector is a lot of things.
But not just Phil Spector, probably a lot of the music industry
in general.
So it's a casting couch.
Yes.
And so then, you know, he gets thrown out. But then he comes back dressed as a woman.
Oop.
To try to casting couch slide in there with, mm-hmm, the other ladies. Because it's like
DMs.
A harem. Yeah. Kind of situation, yeah, you know, in,
oh
that,
my God, that
casting couch.
I know that it was when that scene happened, I was like, ugh, gross.
About the casting couch stuff.
Yeah.
And this was a PG rated movie.
Well, remember, I actually don't know if I've ever told you this. PG 13 was not invented until 1985.
This would have been PG 13 for sure.
This should have been an R movie.
There
were boobies, weren't there? I remember boobies.
I don't remember boobies, but right, there was unwanted sexual stuff.
I mean, yeah, there was rape.
Yeah.
I mean, and let me say something. I was actually reading an interview with Paul Williams, who did like a retrospective on Phantom of the Paradise in 2019. So not that long ago. And I really appreciate that he called that scene for what it is.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. He was like, I mean, it's rape, you know, like, yeah. It was a casting couch thing. And I was just like, you know, he gets it.
Yeah.
And that's also why I feel like Phantom of the Paradise also holds up or was so watchable. It just felt so sadly modern.
Right. It felt like they knew this 30, 40 years ago. Like
before social media.
Why didn't everything change right then?
And why isn't this? I mean, first off, it bombed critically.
Yeah.
And commercially.
So we're still, this is still like the beginning of the movie stuff.
Yeah.
So he dresses up as a woman. They violently kick him out because he's dressed like a woman and he's not supposed to be there.
Yeah.
So then they frame him by putting The record producer has paid off the police.
Yeah.
So the police walk by, see this beat up person.
Yeah.
And they plant drugs on them.
Yeah.
On him.
Yeah.
Because.
Yeah.
Because the record producer wanted them to or whatever. Yeah. So he goes to jail. In jail.
Oh my God, this is crazy.
What? They like cut out his tongue?
Yeah. They
because
replace his teeth with metal teeth.
Yes. Because he's in jail. Like that's just what they do in jail.
Yeah.
If you've. You know,
well, it was part of like an experimental, they said it was part of like an experimental prison program to decrease infection among inmates.
Yeah.
Funded by the Swan Production or the Swan Foundation, who
is the record producer.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah, which in itself could be a satire of the prison.
No, it is.
You
it
know,
is.
Prison
it's satirizing the prison industry complex there. It's satirizing cops, you know, the relationship. Yeah.
So he's making, he's at like a toy factory in jail because they're like making toys for kids or something.
Right.
And with his metal teeth already turning into a monster.
I know.
And then they
play.
So this
is where like the horror part comes in.
Right. And then on the speakers, they play like the Juicy Fruits or
yes!
somebody. And he wigs out and like maybe kills a guy, beats people up. And as punishment, they catch him. They stuff him into a toy box. And then they just like... drop him off somewhere. Like, basically, they're like, okay, we can't handle you, so you're free.
Yeah, but they, like, burned off his face, remember?
I don't think they burned off his face, because his face thing happens when he breaks out of the box, and he's going to seek revenge.
Oh, we're still in the box.
He's in the box.
Okay, sorry.
Then he busts out of the box.
Yeah.
He runs to the record studio, looking for his man, Swan.
Yeah.
Smashes things. Then I believe smashes his face in like a record press, how they make the vinyl records.
Yeah. Which kind of cool in a way.
Super cool.
Record press. Okay. Go.
Awesome. Didn't even know that was a thing. and this is still early, so early in the movie that you're like, what? You're just like, what am I watching? What? This is a musical. And I don't know where this is going to go.
There are metal teeth happening.
He finds the record producer and he's like this menace. And you're like, wow, he's going to tear this guy's head off. And the record producer is like this 4-foot dweebo who looks like, you know, a Phil Spector stand-in. And the Phil Spector stand-in just grabs, he had like a mask on. He finds a mask. He grabs the mask. He takes it off. And he's like, no, and he's just totally crippled. And then Phil Spector says, you know, Swan says, now, okay, I'll make a deal with you. You know, if you write music for me, then, you know, whatever, you'll be great.
You'll become the Phantom of the Paradise.
Yes. And you sign this contract and it's all about the contracts and the sleazy business.
Yeah.
And our monster, who is just so humbled by literally just having his mask removed, he says, yeah, I'll do it. I'll do anything, you know.
But then what does our little Winslow do?
Which one's Winslow?
Winslow is the dude, no?
Is the nerdy guy who's now the monster?
Yeah, monster.
Oh, well, first of all, he gets a mask upgrade. He gets,
he gets
the
same long
mask.
Black cape.
The mask is awesome, though.
Yeah, yeah, I agree.
The creature design.
I want to dress up.
Halloween or something.
Oh, totally.
No one will get it, but it's awesome.
I know.
Yeah. It's like even just that part of it is worthy of discussion.
It's just
right?
really cool. Yeah, I agree.
So he gets screwed.
Tries to kill the beach bums.
Yes. He like sets a bomb off.
Yeah. Which the beach bums.
That might have been before the thing.
The Juicy Fruits.
Oh, yes.
And now the beach bums.
And I guess that was because.
Are doing surf rock.
Yeah. Yes.
Because it is the satire.
And the music industry is all about revolving. What can we use from the past to make money now? Right. So not the novelty of. What do you call that? Okay. That's not how it. Nostalgia. It's all about the music industry. Is all about nostalgia.
You were looking for nostalgia.
Yes.
All that time.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. So the movie goes from there. I don't want to spoil anymore, but it is just fun.
No, I agree. I think it's fun, but it's also like it's dark.
It is.
Like the end is like wow.
Really? I thought it was a happy ending.
I mean, just like the way that you get there, you know what I mean? Yeah, I mean, like, I remember just that really big ending piece, you know?
There's a rock star. So he's writing this musical, I guess, that's performed at the Paradise, which is the club.
Yeah.
And so the song is being performed by somebody named Meat. Is that right?
Beef.
And whoever Beef is could be a star in their own right because they are awesome. They rock so hard. I was like major Beef fan after watching one performance. So I don't think you've ever seen, but you've probably heard me talk about the Baltimore Rock Opera Society.
No.
Okay, so there's a group in Baltimore called the Baltimore Rock Opera Society that puts on original rock musicals. And this movie was the closest thing I've ever seen to that.
Yeah.
And the spirit of just like rock, something weird and independent and sort of genre horror stuff going on. It really made me think of that. If you're in the Maryland, Baltimore, DC metro area, whatever, check out Baltimore Rock Opera Society. They are awesome. This movie definitely gave me the same feeling of what things that they like to do.
Do you think your friends know about Phantom of the Paradise? Like,
you mean the Baltimore Rock Opera?
Yeah. Do you have friends?
Somebody does. Somebody does.
Somebody must.
Yeah.
That's really cool. No, yeah, I gotta say, you know what's one thing that I've realized with age? I'm gonna sound like so old. But like, I rarely see films now that aren't something like I've seen before. You know, mm-hmm. And it's not like Phantom of the Paradise per se is the most groundbreaking thing, mm-hmm. but I think it is absolutely one of the most well done satires of all time. And I think, as you said, there are just so many layers. It's really absurd to me that it failed so miserably when it's just so well done. And I'm glad that it's kind of have a resurgence in you know, after the fact, but I think
has it though? Cause I still never heard of it.
No, I agree.
Yeah.
It really is kind of more of a, like it's a deep cut. It's a deep cut. And it's absurd because I actually think this movie is better than like Carrie or any other Brian De Palma film I've ever seen.
Yeah.
And I think it, you know, first off, he wrote and directed it himself. It's just very clearly focused.
Yes.
And it's fun. It's dark. It's genre for sure. And yeah, and I think it really looks at things with a very critical eye. It's a sharp satire. I think it's mm-hmm. very sharp.
Yeah.
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 Do you think it was funny?
There were funny parts, but not,
I thought it was really funny.
Really?
Yeah.
I think the whole premise is silly and stupid, but it takes itself seriously, which I love.
No, it does. It does. But you know, it earns that, you know. It's not like I don't think it's joyless.
No,
I will
no
say
way.
That.
Yeah, it's joy. I mean, there's a character named Beef.
I think that's like sort of maybe the dissonant part of it, right? Is that like it's just there's so much darkness, but it's done in a way where you're like, wait, is this like supposed to be funny? Like oftentimes I felt like maybe the signals were confused, but I like that. I enjoy that creativity.
It had a homemade or like physically crafted wonder, like a Willy Wonka style fantasy, that they really had to make that.
I agree.
Make that work. And one thought I kept thinking was like, oh my gosh, Rolling Stone magazine must have thought this was like the best movie. They must have loved this movie. And then they even use Rolling Stone magazine in the movie. Yeah. They have like a scene and they're like Rolling Stone. I would be curious to know like if somebody reviewed it at the time. They must have. This seems like it would be right up their alley because it's like every music writer's movie, you know? Like this thing was a slam dunk for people that are in the music industry.
Pauline Kael of The New Yorker gave it a good review at the time. And Pauline Kael is probably my favorite film critic. So, you know, she's just proving that she is
right. She didn't
smart
miss.
As hell. One of the reviews here says, too broad in its effects and too bloated in style to cut very deeply as a parody of The Phantom of the Opera, Brian De Palma's rock horror movie is closer to the anything goes mode of a Mad Magazine lampoon.
All right, lampoon. I mean, wow.
That's
trying to denigrate Mad Magazine on the way out the door.
Just like, I feel like
it's not supposed to be a Phantom of the Opera. It's not supposed to give you the yucks of a parody of Phantom of the Opera.
That's like the thing. I feel like the bits that people think it parodies are more like homages.
Uh-huh.
And I think the actual razor is to, again, the satirical topic.
Yeah.
And I think that's sort of the fun thing about movies like Phantom of the Paradise and even movies like Rocky Horror, where clearly, yeah, it has like a thesis statement. We're a parody of the old art house, or we're going to parody this. But then, you know, they focus on other things and they bring it to life with all of these references and whatnot. But yeah, Phantom of the Paradise.
Is the name in its own way? Because,
yeah,
it should have maybe just been named something else.
Yeah, maybe. I like the name,
you
though.
Do. Yeah.
I really do.
I don't hate it. It's a little hard to remember, though.
Phantom of the Paradise?
Yeah.
That's the only reason why I kept remembering it.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. But, you know, I am a Phantom of the Opera fan.
Okay.
So I think I'm a bit
biased
in that sense.
Yeah.
But, no, yeah, I think this is, again, very... I think it's a fiercely intelligent film. I'll say this about these films. I think, and What We Do in the Shadows, I think they're all very, very smart. And perhaps smarter than most people give it credit for.
Mm-hmm.
And
and it's not dry and boring.
It's not.
Like some, I feel like satire, what you don't want to hit is that like heavy handedness. Like this could have been a heavy handed record company thing. Like I get it.
It kind of has its own storyline outside of the satire.
Yeah.
The storyline in and of itself is satire, but it actually cares about it's like its story.
And you want to see what happens next.
Yeah.
If for no other reason than the spectacle of like,
yeah,
what are they going to do? I mean, this guy just got his teeth removed and he's like smashing things. And like, what's going to happen?
I think that's like the good or, you know, that's like one of the stylistic differences between like spoofs and parodies and satires is that spoofs don't really care about the storyline. They're just trying to cram as many jokes as possible.
Yeah.
You know, as many references that you can catch.
Yeah,
right.
But
satires tend to really, you know, or satires in order to be successful, they have to really feed, you know, its story world, or else, as you said, it comes off very dry or heavy handed. And it's like, and I mean, we've seen those. We've seen satires that just aren't fun to watch.
Yeah.
You know, like Idiocracy, I would argue, is not fun to watch.
Yeah.
It's very heavy handed. All right. So Phantom of the Paradise.
Two thumbs up.
Two laughs out of two.
Two laughs out of two.
Okay. All right. That makes sense. So next, in chronological order, we're going to be doing One Cut of the Dead, which is from Japan, 2017. And it is directed by Shinichiro Ueda.
じゃないですか。うわ。ああ。撮影は続ける。カメラは止めない。やったった。盛り上がってきたね。日暮さん、年齢です。 pierce.
カット割りなしのワンカット、最初から最後まで一度もカメラを止めません。
そんな無茶な企画あるわけないでしょう。
All right, so that was a bit of One Cut of the Dead.
And this is not the satire. This is, wait, what was the last one? The last one was a parody and satire. This one is what? What is One Cut of the
this
Dead?
This is a satire.
This is a satire.
I think it's a satire.
Of the zombie movie or the film industry? What?
Parodies are the ones that have one focus. Spoofs are the ones that have a general focus. Satires are critiquing something specifically.
So what is One Cut of the Dead critiquing?
Well, first off, seriously, if you haven't seen this movie, stop listening now.
Stop right
Let's
now.
Let's first talk about what One Cut of the Dead is about without with spoilers.
With spoilers.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, One Cut of the Dead.
I can't spoil it. I physically cannot.
Okay. So, One Cut of the Dead starts off as this zombie film. And you're made to believe that. You're just totally made to believe that, you know, it's a low budget, single take zombie horror, which, by the way, was a real single take. It wasn't a fake single take. They said it took 6 different times and it was the most difficult part of the shoot itself. By the way, this is Japan's most profitable film of all time because it was only made for $25,000 across 8 days.
Oh my God.
And it grossed $3 million.
It should gross $300 million.
But yeah, so it starts off, you know, you get your zombie movie. I think even in the trailer, I think I did watch a trailer out of curiosity after the fact to see if it revealed anything. And the trailer itself is only cut of the
that
zombie,
initial,
yeah, of that
what,
initial
37 minutes. That's a long single cut. Oh my god!
And
gosh.
An actual one, you know,
wow.
It was a real one. And like I said, it took 6 times. And then
only
credits
days.
Roll, and you're like, oh, okay.
And I'll add in that what you're watching. It doesn't quite make sense to your brain because there are parts that seem like terribly acted. There are like
so badly.
These rambling improv spots where you're just like, this is bad. The lighting is kind of bad.
Oh, yeah. I honestly, when I first started this movie, I was like, man, I don't understand people.
A lot of people must have turned this one off.
Yeah.
Because I've seen it. I've seen it twice now. And even knowing how what everything's gonna happen, I thought, oh, maybe I'll like the first part better now. But again, seeing it for the second time, I still didn't like that. It does get better. Like after maybe 20 minutes.
But the thing is, it's supposed to be that bad.
Right.
And why is it supposed to be that bad?
It all works. But by the end of that one cut 37 minute segment, which you don't really know what's going on, by the end, I think it gets good.
Oh yeah,
and to the fact where the ending sequence is cool and the credits roll, and I'm like, wait, actually, I don't know why the credits are rolling. This movie has a lot more to go, but you know, you don't know what's going to happen next. But I do think that one cut gets fun, even if you don't know anything about what happens next.
I think you definitely get to a point where you're like, well, where is this going?
Yeah,
especially the first time if you know that there's so much time left. But anyway, so what happens after it's revealed that, you know, the credits roll? Then what's the next thing?
So then it goes 1 month. It says 1 month earlier.
Exactly.
And you see that the person who is playing the director, because in that one cut film, there's like a director, we're seeing like the making of a zombie movie that turns into a zombie movie. So already we have one meta layer.
Yeah.
And then we reveal that the next part of the movie is 1 month earlier.
Yeah.
And you get to see how that movie was made, the pre-production of the first 37 minutes of the film.
Yeah.
And so you get these great like comedic setups.
Oh my God.
And you start to realize why the parts that were awkward and
were so awkward. Yeah.
And then you get this tension of like, oh my God. And it builds and builds. And you go, oh my God, I can't wait to watch. I hope they show me that first part again. I hope they, you know, show you how it all went wrong as it's going wrong. And they do.
Yeah, they do.
And it's so satisfying.
It is so satisfying.
I think the main critique
that I get out of students, especially that watch this, is they're like, yeah, but it's not really a horror film. And I'm like, yeah,
that's true of like a lot of horror. You know what I mean?
Yeah. But I think, and even with that, it is still a remarkable horror satire, though, because that's what it is. And what it's satirizing, specifically to answer your question, is the very idea of low budget filmmaking, you know, and the reason and the Japanese film industry in general, because remember, there were like these producers that they were trying to please or something.
Yeah,
right?
The producers are basically like, we're choosing you, the director, because you are cheap and you're fast and you're average. And like, we don't want you to spend a bunch of money. We want you to do something on the cheap that people will see. And the producer, even as she's watching it, she's like on her phone. She's not really watching
it. Yeah, totally. And I think that this may be the best of the like zombie satires or whatever. I don't think you can do better than this movie. And
this,
sure, the second half isn't a horror. I'll give you that. But it still is revolving around that topic. And I think if anything, the fact that it's so experimental with form is
that
it's brilliance.
It is brilliance.
Yeah. It's just very intelligent.
And it's one of those movies where you watch it and you just think of the courage or the bravery of the director or whoever put this together that put it in this order, because it must have been so tempting to just give people the story in the correct quote unquote order. Like, it would have been so much easier to watch. You would have gotten it from the beginning, but it's so much more powerful the way they did it. And I don't see like an American movie in theaters that would have done this. Like, they would have had that level of confidence to be like, nope, we're going to show you, we're going to drop you right in. And then, you know,
it's
so good.
It pays off. I think, like I said, it's probably one of the best payoffs I've seen in my entire life.
Yeah.
One Car of the Dead. I think, especially when we think of horror comedy, I think that breaking up the format is what leads to bigger returns. It is a large reason why I like Phantom of the Paradise, because even though, Phantom of the Paradise does sort of have like a beginning, middle, and end, as you said, it takes many turns to get there in order to really understand the main point of the film.
Mm-hmm.
And What Cut of the Dead may not be as serious perhaps as Phantom of the Paradise. It's definitely, you know, I think if we're to classify One Cut of the Dead in totality, it's definitely a comedy, but it is, again, razor sharp. And it's a comedy in a way where I think even the satire is not that obvious, because I've had students watch this.
I didn't know off the top of my head, like the first movie, I could say Record Industry, got it. But this one, I didn't know what it was satirizing.
But then when you like just think about it twice, you're like, oh shit, yeah. You know, like it is the very fact that this is a very independent film. Again, remember, this was made for $25,000. And it was made at a drama camp. It was like made through drama camp connections. Like, no one in this movie is famous.
It was based on a play.
So. Yeah. Or like he was inspired by a play. I think Ghost in a Box.
Yeah,
is
Ghost
what
in
it was
a Box.
Called. Yeah.
And I think one thing which may be slightly a detriment is that I think most people will come away from this movie and just being kind of more in awe of the achievement of it,
yeah,
that they made it and that they made something so unique.
Yeah.
But there's a lot more there. Like what you're saying with the satire, there's also some like really heartwarming notes that it hits.
Oh yeah.
That doesn't need to, but it still does it and it's fine.
It's just a good movie.
And then the absolute meta of meta, where then at the end, as a real credits roll, they show you how they made the movie that they made, that they decided to make, is like the absolute pullback, most meta moment of them all.
Yeah.
That was such a slam dunk.
Yeah. I truly think that One Cut of the Dead is just one of the best movies of the 21st century. I think the most difficult part of it is like getting people to watch it.
Yeah.
You know, because you don't want to spoil anything.
Yeah.
And then you even understand the fatigue when you tell people, yeah, it's a zombie movie.
Yeah.
And they're like,
that's true.
Oh.
And then, and so there's only so many people you can hit with that.
Yeah.
And then on top of that, you got to be like, and you can't know anything else about it. And you have to get through the first, you know,
40 minutes. Yes, just get the first 40
minutes. Which is like a big ask. And, and it's a foreign film. So, you know, people have sometimes there is a Venn diagram and there is a chunk of that where it's like, well, I like zombie movies, but I don't know about, you know, with subtitles or whatever. And they are going to be missing out on what's one of the best zombie movies that there is.
Yeah.
Because this was awesome. Because, you know, total zombie
just one
fatigue.
Of the best stories. It's just a very well told story
so
and a story for our time.
Yeah.
There have been a couple of like short sequels made in response.
Oh, really?
Like they said that there was one done in quarantine. I still haven't seen it. But what I enjoy again is the openness of the format. And I think that lends itself so well to this movie. And it is one of the reasons it is such a unique and, you know, fun watch.
Yeah. These first two movies, they're both fun at the end of the day. In addition to everything else that they are, right? I mean, yeah.
All right. So One Cut of the Dead. We're good. Okay. Now we end.
What do we have left? Spoof?
No, we only did satires.
So these are not three examples, one of each.
No.
Okay.
No.
Okay.
I like to confuse
catching
people.
Up here as a student.
I like to confuse. Well, whenever I give this module to students, I actually make them decide. I'm like, you tell me what you think these movies are.
Uh-huh.
And for One Cut of the Dead, a lot of them say spoof. And I think people just don't understand the spoofs don't have a larger message.
Yeah.
You know,
but I think the
there
larger
are elements of things that are spoofed in One Cut of the Dead, but there's a story there, you know?
Yeah.
The
satire though is smaller than it is in like the Paradise one, you know, it's not. I guess, but it depends on.
Oh, I see what you mean. I mean, it's just different.
They
get there differently. You're right that the satire in Phantom of the Paradise makes itself, I think, really obvious from the get-go.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, apparently the parody elements of Phantom of the Paradise seem to be more subtle to people.
Or the One Cut of the Dead, yeah.
But I do agree that I can see why people think One Cut of the Dead is a spoof at first, but it doesn't sustain itself that way. And in general, spoofs aren't sustainable. I think that's one thing.
For like a format of a 90-minute, two-hour movie.
What I mean is spoofs, by their very nature, are like joke movies.
Too fluff?
No, I mean, that's just what it is. Like,
you got to be good. I think there are some that ascend. But
can you think of a spoof that does? Because every single spoof that I think of, I'm like, yeah, it's a spoof. It's just kind of
I guess I'm just thinking of comedies now, like Dumb and Dumber for
that's
me.
That's not a spoof, though.
Really?
What is it spoofing?
I don't know. Spoofing.
You
we're
see?
Just spoofing around.
No, these spoofs and parodies and satires are very much premised on referential information.
So I
think horror comedies in general, more than any blend of genres, really rely on referential exchanges.
Yeah, yeah, I'm with you.
To be the genre that it is. That's sort of my, at least, you know, that's my take on it. Mm-hmm. Like every horror comedy I've ever seen, even things like Freaky, where I think like Freaky is a very genuine movie, but there's still a lot of referential back frame to it if you want to get its totality. Mm. I think one of the smartest things I've read about this whole like horror comedy thing is that you can watch a Scary Movie, you can watch even Rocky Horror, not have watched any of the things that it references, and still pretty much like have an okay time, but a lot of its humor is lost on you because you don't know those references. I think that is true with Phantom of the Paradise and with One Cut of the Dead in different ways. Like, I think if maybe you weren't so aware of zombie fatigue or even feel that yourself, then One Cut of the Dead isn't as whippy snappy to you. Mm-hmm. With Phantom of the Paradise, if you're not as attuned to, you know, how awful the music industry is, or see, mm-hmm. you know, the way that these things are very layered, then yeah, you're going to miss out on a lot of that. Or on the other hand, you know, like perhaps you're protective of that sanctity or whatever. I don't know.
Yeah.
But spoofs in and of themselves, they just are movies that are there to make jokes on previous existing things, like Young Frankenstein.
Which I guess like Spaceballs did ascend. Like some movies culturally and to a lot of people are these like they are that is powerful for them, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Because the source material is powerful. Like if Star Wars is super important to you and Spaceballs is like,
you know, I never saw Spaceballs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think I have, but it's not, it's not powerful to me.
So it's a space spoof.
Space spoof. Yes. Okay. Yes. All right. Absolutely. I think.
Okay. All right.
What We Do in the Shadows.
The series.
It's nightfall.
He awakened.
Very cool, Master. Very scary.
Thank you.
Nadja, Laszlo!
Yeah.
Yes?
Can you come downstairs for a second, please?
The problems with living with other vampires are the vampires I have chosen to stay with.
I wanted to talk about general hygiene in the cell. Last night, there were all these people down there, half drunk.
Well, where did they find the alcohol?
No, they were half drunk. They'd been half drunk.
If you've got something to say, then damn well say it.
It's not hygienic!
Nandor is like a big turkey.
Cannot pay with that.
I'm so sorry.
So you can't be throwing ancient coins at me.
Guillermo,
stab
this man. Guillermo is my familiar.
I'm not a killer. I find people who are easy to kill.
Are you virgins?
I don't see how that's relevant.
I'm killing it, babe.
Oh, that's werewolf piss.
Two werewolves.
Colin, what are you doing in here?
This is my bedroom.
My name is Colin Robinson.
Hi, Deb.
And I am a energy vampire. We either bore you with a long conversation.
Hey, Don.
Or
Don.
We enrage you.
Something terrible is coming!
Master, this is pretty macabre.
I've got my cake caught in the door.
Well, yank it out.
No!
Fuck. All right, so that was a bit of What We Do in the Shadows, the series. So for some context, What We Do in the Shadows is a 2014 New Zealand mockumentary horror comedy directed by Jemaine Clement and Taika Waititi. They also starred in it.
Oh, which one is the first guy? The first
Jemaine
name you
Clement?
Mentioned? Yeah, what's that?
He was.
Is he the Flight of the Conchords guy?
Yeah, Flight of the Conchords
guy. Gotcha.
And Taika Waititi's Taika Waititi.
Right.
They have a long history with this. Originally, the idea of What We Do in the Shadows just came about Taika wanting to do a mockumentary, mm-hmm. and they were thinking of examples of like subjects that would make good mockumentaries. Really what they said that they focused on things that seem to have like a lot of interpersonal relationships, and about came the idea of vampires, the way that vampires, you know, have all these rules. And the first film, which originally was a short film that then they got the funding to make into a feature film, was premised on the idea that, like, you know, they were just these vampire friends that had to realistically exist in New Zealand. And yeah, I like the movie. Mm-hmm. But it's funny, I didn't watch the series for a long time because I thought that it wouldn't translate well. And I think the series blows the movie out of the water.
Yeah, I saw the movie as well, at least once. I think I've seen it twice. And I don't think there's any of the mockumentary movies that really hit with me. So although I think I enjoyed it, it didn't thrill me. And I wasn't really looking forward to the series because I kind of felt like been there, done that. I got it. You know, I didn't need more of the joke.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what kept me away initially.
Yeah. How much of the series did you watch?
So I watched one full season and one episode of the second season. And so the big thing for me to get over is the style. And I'm one of the few people that didn't love The Office when it was on TV. I think I like The Office better in retrospect. And I think it's better to watch without commercials. But one thing that these shows do at their worst, so they don't always do this, but sometimes they do, and at their worst, they will have one character say something ridiculous, and then the other character will look directly into the camera. And that bugs me so much.
Really?
It's just like a tick. And when I see it, I just cringe and I hate it. And I think part of it is I think it's kind of sloppy writing. It's like writing a joke with no punchline. It's like, okay, one person just says the weirdest stuff. What's the boss's name in The Office?
Michael
just says and I do like The Office. I will laugh at The Office, but at its worst, when it is just Michael says something ridiculous, Dwight says something ridiculous, and then Jim looks in the camera, I just hate that. And so that is my plight when going through the first season, is that there are moments where I have that experience.
You know, it's so funny that you mentioned that, though, because that's one of my favorite... It's one of my favorite gimmicks. No, you know, I can respect that. I can respect that mockumentaries aren't your thing. But I got to say, I am a huge fan of The Office. I think everyone on this show has better chemistry than they had in the movie. Now we're in America, New York, to be specific. There's a Romani vampire, the familiar is Mexican and gay. Kayvon Nandor is Iranian. You have an emotional vampire, like the concept of an emotional vampire. Yeah. I think one thing that I really love about the series is just how genuinely deep it goes into vampire jokes.
Uh-huh.
Like that episode I told you to watch
with
episode
the,
11.
The
vampire council.
Yeah.
It's just one of the best episodes like every vampire is on that episode. And that's just like, so, do you know, first off, like, how much, like, we had Wesley Snipes.
Uh-huh.
We had Evan Rachel Wood.
That was good. That was
from
good.
True Blood.
Uh-huh. Oh, is that what she was representing? I didn't catch.
She was representing True Blood.
Yeah, gotcha.
I never even saw True Blood myself.
She looks like she just belongs. So I was like, yeah.
Yeah.
True Blood is so good. Just True Blood is so good. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, no,
Until it's
I
not,
just.
But.
No, yeah. I just, and again, like, I think a lot of people don't really know where the satire comes in this one, whereas I actually think the societal issues at large a premise works better in the series than it does in the film. Mm-hmm. But in general, what this entire, I guess, franchise has done is satirizes documentaries in and of themselves, and also satirizes vampires and their representations in media, you know, and that in and of itself is remarkable. Yeah, I really like the series. I discovered in quarantine. It is probably still one of my favorite discoveries of quarantine. And what I really just enjoy about it is also its multiculturalism, which gets more into detail in season two. But especially season one, you know, it's establishing its style and whatnot, its humor. And I just think everyone on it acts so well. Mm-hmm. I think the writing is amazing. It's also so Jemaine and Taika created the show, but the showrunner is actually a Black woman.
Oh, really?
And yeah. I love to see it. Yeah. So yeah. What are we doing?
Who is the actress who plays the woman, the basically main woman of the
main woman
first
that is Natasha Demetrio.
She's great.
She's incredible.
Incredible.
I think she is my favorite vampire.
Yeah.
And I actually think the second season is better for her. I think the second season is better overall. Mm-hmm. They really get into their own like lane. And there's some really great cameos in the second season. Like you get Mark Hamill. Mark Hamill.
Star Wars?
Yeah. Is crazy. Ooh. In his cameo. And yeah. What We Do in the Shadows, the series.
Yes.
I will make cases for it.
Uh-huh.
And I appreciate you trying.
Yeah, I will continue watching the second season because I could already tell. Well, just from what you said, when people say that you know, that it gets second season's even better. And I could even tell from just the first episode that it felt tighter. It felt wasn't a lot of room for improv. It felt just more like sharper.
Yeah.
And I like
agree
that.
With you entirely that the first season is very, it's very much establishing its style, you know? So I definitely agree that it leans more on like the office-y kind of tropes, but the second season gets rid of some of its side storylines, which, for example, a critique that I have is I wasn't crazy about the LARP, you know, side storyline in season one.
Yeah, I didn't even log in my memory.
But they got rid of that one mainly because the chick that was the main part of that storyline ended up getting like another show. So they had to eliminate her.
Oh.
Beanie Feldstein.
Now, is she the one in the...
She's Jonah Hill's sister in real life.
No way. She looked at the... I thought I was...
You thought you were going to make a bad joke?
I thought
no.
I was problematic.
No.
My brain.
No,
I thought no. My thoughts were canceling.
She looks...
Okay. Because
she looks like
it. I literally had... I mean, maybe everyone's had that thought. Like, oh, is this the female Jonah Hill? Oh.
So Beanie Feldstein had to go. And so they get rid of that whole...
She has to go? I thought she was going to be like a lead character in the second season. She gets so much airtime.
No, she does. But I forget what it was. She either got like some starring role in a movie or a different series. I think it was a movie because I don't
what
think
was
she's
the movie? Book Nerd or
Book Smart. And yeah, so again, the second season like slims down and really just focuses on the actual comedy. Whereas I think the first season focused more on the style. But I mean, I still think the first season has a lot of standouts, like, you know, talking about satire of a, you know, societal topic, the fucking last episode of the first season where Nandor wants to become an American citizen.
Oh,
and
yes.
They're like, you know, he's like, yeah, I'm from modern day Iran. And Guillermo's like, you know, like, don't mention that.
Yeah.
And the whole part about like applying for it, like, I think that is all, that's actually like more political satire than it is horror satire.
Yeah.
And I think it's very smart. And again, I think having a diverse writer's room, especially in the second season, it shows.
Does it?
Because it's just, it's unique. Mm-hmm. I gotta say, I think it's definitely one of the most unique comedies on TV right now. And I really appreciate the fact that, you know, we sort of have gone, as you said, these movies do very different, or these whatever entities do very different things. Like Phantom of the Paradise is very stylistic and very focused on, you know, the music is good, mm-hmm. and the overarching message of the music industry, you know, like it has so many meta layers. And then mm-hmm. One Cut of the Dead is sort of talking about the Japanese industry in general. But as you said, it's also sort of, it's like a wholesome movie in mm-hmm. a way. Mm-hmm. It's very pure hearted. And while the satire may not be as obvious to people at first, it's definitely a movie made to, I think, just make people feel good. And then also just to kind of have fun. Whereas What We Do in the Shadows, I think, has that layer of wanting to nail these references, but also wanting to be very sharp-witted about American social relationships, you know, through the guise of vampires. And that's the thing, they know their vampires so well. So they can go just in so many different offshoots with it. Like, for example, I actually think the emotional vampire bit is so inspired.
That works for you.
It really works for me. It doesn't work for you?
No.
Really?
And part of me is impressed that they go for it and they go, this
they go
is
hard.
This
and
is
the second
character.
Season it goes harder.
Like, it could it's kind of, it would normally just be a throwaway joke, like maybe one side character is, and you see them once every few episodes.
No.
But to have a serious revolving main cast person be this thing that they created,
I think it's beautiful.
Yeah.
I think maybe the second season may sell you. I think
I love that comedian person so much.
Mark Prosh.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's awesome.
I mean, basically just from his YouTube, like, or not YouTube, but like his IRL comedy where he pretended to be like a motivational yo-yo person or whatever.
Yeah.
That's where I first saw him.
Yeah, he's awesome.
So,
yeah. So that's my case for What We Do in the Shadows. Satire
nice.
Of the year.
Satire of the year.
Satire of the quarantine.
We have a satire of the quarantine. We've got a film of the century.
Film of the century.
21st century.
Well, we said it was like one of the best.
We got to narrow that down, huh?
Satires
of
the 21st century.
Or spoof. I actually think
it is not a spoof.
But it, spoof isn't necessarily a negative connotation, right? I mean,
but it wouldn't.
Or is it?
Have,
is there an emptiness
well,
to a
no,
spoof?
No, that's my point.
Yeah.
Anyone listening to this, there is emptiness to spoofs.
Yeah.
As long as there is the very essence of a spoof is its emptiness. It's its empty
yes.
references.
Okay.
It's its jokes. Like okay. again, think it's Scary Movie.
Yeah.
Not another, like, is there a larger message to those movies?
I have to watch it again.
No, there's not. You know, there would be no
larger,
like,
messages. Cha-ching, cha-ching.
No, literally, that's
yeah.
what spoofs do.
Although I'm sure there are, I mean, I'm sure there, well, not sure, but I'm guessing there is some commentary in those, some of those jokes, but.
I don't think there is
at
all.
As a whole, no.
No.
Although, okay, well, how about this? How about myself and some of your students might refer to One Cut of the Dead as a spoof because. The emptiness, not as in the One Cut of the Dead, but as in the beholder. We don't understand. We're not catching the deeper.
I mean, yeah, clearly you guys don't understand it.
We're
if
like,
that's
oh,
what
yeah,
you're saying. Like, yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No. So horror comedies, we like them. These are three of my faves.
Sorry to interrupt, but Freaky? I was going to ask, is there any other ones that you'd recommend people look out for?
Not off the top of my head. Freaky is, again, one that I really like. I think the Happy Death Days count here, and those are definitely satires. I like satires a lot. I tend to lean heavily into satires.
What other genre, like, what's a good satire for you?
I don't know. That's a good question. You actually, Twin Peaks overall.
Really?
I think, you know what, I would say Twin Peaks is more parody, but not really. But I mean, it started off as one. Like, it wanted to satirize soap operas. And in the process, it created the crime drama, which didn't exist before 1990.
No way. Really?
Yeah, no.
That's so hard to believe.
It is hard to believe, but it's true.
Really?
Twin Peaks was the very first murder mystery crime procedural.
Wait, whoa. Angela Lansbury on the phone. Bring.
Yeah, but it wasn't
Murder,
like
she wrote.
No, yeah, but it wasn't like.
But there's something.
I mean, come on. The fucking genre of a young girl gets murdered and it changes a town forever.
Yeah.
Twin Peaks was the first one.
Okay.
And I mean, fuck. The last show I really liked is literally an offshoot of
Stranger
Twin
Things.
Peaks. No, Mayor of Easttown.
Oh, really?
Which was amazing. But I mean, that's what it's about. It's about a young girl
right,
who gets
right.
murdered
different
in the town.
Different tone.
No. I mean, it was, you know, a murder mystery at first. No, I mean, you can say whatever you want, but it's true. Twin Peaks was the first one.
Yeah.
And I think that's the beautiful thing about Twin Peaks is that it created this massive cultural phenomenon. But then it when it came back, it resembled none of that.
Mm-hmm.
It completely was like the crime is not the interesting part to the story. It's the humanity of humanities.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why we started off with Twin Peaks and we're ending with Twin Peaks. That is why All Twin right. Peaks.
The circle has been completed.
The greatest thing I've ever seen in my life.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Where can you go? We're just going to end up back at Twin Peaks. the circle of life.
And so horror comedies, it's a fun little genre. I don't think I have any other recommendations off the top of my head, but you know, I'm also always looking to be challenged, but I'm usually right. I'm always right.
Oh wow. Yeah. The humble professor.
What do you have any final thoughts?
Everybody out there, kids, stay away from the spoofs. Okay, if you see a spoof at the movie theater, you walk right into the other showing of a satire where you will.
I can't believe spoofs used to make so much money.
They still could.
I don't think if they like a haunted house didn't make money. And that was only a few years. Yeah, that was only a few years ago.
I think it just needs to be the right. It's like lightning in a bottle.
I don't agree with that. I think spoofs generally.
You think spoofs are done?
I think spoofs just appeal to a low common denominator. And I think audiences just are over it. And I'm not saying that
audiences
in defense.
Will never be over.
But I'm saying
spoofing.
Like the box office proves it.
Yeah,
you know, they're like Date Night also wasn't that long ago.
Was that a spoof?
Yeah. I think it was called Date Night. About the romantic comedies. And again,
these are all rehashed. Like the Naked Gun series was probably spoofs.
Those are spoofs, yes.
Those were huge, right?
Yeah, those
but
were
huge.
But
at some point, there's a diminishing return.
But
Same with these, like you got to hit a new cultural lightning in a bottle and then you will have your next spoof hit. Somebody will do it.
I think spoofs in and of themselves, though, are outdated.
You say spoofs are dead?
Yeah.
You're wrong.
Yeah. Yeah,
you're darn wrong.
Because we're smarter now. Because you can get spoofs on fucking
TikTok. And TikTok is like the biggest thing in the world.
I agree. That's what I'm saying. No one is going to pay $20 to go
see a
fucking version of a spoof.
Well, right. It can't be, you know, it's got to be just right. But people are going to.
It's not going to happen.
It's going to make tons
of
money.
I fight for America.
I'm putting
and
my
now
money
I gotta
in
go
spoofs.
Because
I'm
the dog
putting
is
all
lost
my money
again.
In spoofs.
I hope you guys have a great day.
Bye.